We are the descendants of
Generation X.
Here's a Drexel graduate from Generation X. Although she went into Drexel for chemical engineering, she had something different in mind when she was in high school.
Journalism. I knew at the time that I wanted to write.
With her want to major in journalism, she recognizes her 7th grade teacher, Mrs. Thomas. And with her previous experiences with her writing, she had a very eloquent style that had a positive reaction when read.
And whenever I would have my writing critiqued, it was always very positive.
But once she got to her junior year in high school, her perspective on things changed.
My mom saw an article in the Ebony magazine about future careers. And one of them, which was played to be a particularly high-paying job, was engineering. So she asked me to think with an open mind and to consider engineering.
From then on, she chose Drexel, and she attended there from 1980 to 1987 in their undergraduate and graduate programs in chemical engineering.
At the time, I wondered whether I'd be making an error, and I really did struggle initially with engineering, because you know how it is when you kind of like have your mind going in a particular direction and you figure you're going to change up at the last minute.
In regards to completing a undergraduate and graduate program at Drexel in chemical engineering, she still believes that when one has a talent, they will always have a talent. And her talent is writing.
What talents you have been gifted with, you always keep. If you are born a writer, you'll always be a writer, regardless of what profession, officially titled, you claim.
Although her title is a chemical engineer, she still applies writing in her everyday work.
I write for business because I work in a technical environment at a consumer healthcare company. So in my role as a supply manager, I'm always in the mode of communicating what the current status is of supply, for example. And if there are any issues that need to be brought up to management, then I'm communicating them, framing them in a way that they can easily understand, that's in digestible pieces.
Although she graduated top of her class, valedictorian, she didn't feel as though she was properly prepared in high school for Drexel's intense program.
I felt like I was woefully unprepared for the level of academic standards that were required.
And with that, she uses her own experiences as a lesson for her kids.
However, I use that experience for my own children, and I work to make sure that as they move through high school, that they are very prepared and that they are able to compete and not have an issue related to what they'd have to do in order to maintain a 3.5 or above type GPA in their college career.
With a different look on her academic status and future, teachers had very high expectations of this woman in high school.
They still remember me, and they remember me with the expectation that I would make something of myself.
With high expectations from her teachers, getting good grades wasn't quote-unquote cool.
But on the flip side, the other students didn't feel that way. I remember her. That was not something that was supposed to be proud of, to be getting good grades. And I can recall some students actually being jealous. But it really honestly didn't faze me that much at that point in my life, because I knew that I was headed somewhere that was going to take me to a level that was, you know, higher.
Maintaining a 3.8 to 3.9 GPA in high school, her experiences were quite different in college.
I can recall clearly having a very difficult time with two subjects, chemistry and physics. And I actually needed a tutor to be able to get through my physics 1 class. And I recall having a tough time with my chemistry class to the point where I was so happy to get a D out of that class. I was, just so relieved to be able to not have to take it again.
Previous to being accepted to Drexel, she had the choice between going to Howard, University of Maryland, or the University of Delaware, and two others. But instead, she chose Drexel.
The process was for me to identify engineering school and go there physically.
And where she belonged was 32nd and Chestnut.
I just connected at Drexel. And that was very different from the experience that I had at other schools. It didn't get the vibe. So from a process standpoint, it was visiting, it was talking to people, it was researching, and of course there was no online at that point in time, but just kind of talking to guidance counselors and looking at the Barron's college reference, those kind of things, library trips, just trying to understand one school versus another.
With all this back knowledge of her chemical engineering degree, the question was raised, why did she choose chemical engineering?
Oh my goodness, that's a question I have often pondered, because it was one of the most difficult disciplines of the other choices that I could have made. I ended up choosing it because it seemed like that was the best one for me, because I liked science and math. So I chose that one because, in general, when I talked to people about it, it sounded very interesting to me at the time. So, I was gathering information by communicating with people who actually were in the field or knew a lot about it. And I kind of made my decision based on my likes and dislikes.
Upon graduating with a chemical engineering degree, undergrad and grad, she imagined herself working at a pilot plant.
My first job, I actually worked for Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company. And they had a pilot plant. I was working in their research and development facility for PET, or polyethylene terephthalate, which was bottles, basically, bottle making. That was my first time really, really, truly getting my feet wet in the chemical engineering world. The actual work as a chemie at Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company. So moving things from pilot scale up to the actual manufacturing facility. And they had a manufacturing facility in West Virginia. So they'd take our formulations and actually run them at that West Virginia facility.
As a Drexel engineer graduate, she comments on the demographics of her class.
There truly were not very many females as compared to the whole class. And there were certainly not very many African-American females, but there were some, I recall. So, you sort of feel like, wow, where is everybody? But you realize that it's not an easy field to jump into.
Being a female herself in that field, she definitely has some advice for aspiring engineers that want to go into any type of engineering discipline.
In terms of trying to prepare yourself for an engineering type field, you've got to take as much math and science as you can possibly cram into your 4 years of high school, because between the math and the science, it seemed like that's all you do in your undergraduate program. You're always involved in some sort of math or science class. And it should be something that you enjoy. You've got to choose, if you choose engineering, it's got to be something that you can see yourself doing and that you actually enjoy. It's something that you have to research from the standpoint of talking to people who are in the field. You got to know for your particular discipline what is going to be involved, what types of jobs, what types of companies, what types of people are in there. You got to know that it suits you and your personality and the things that you're good at.
And those are the views of a chemi undergrad and grad female Generation X chemical engineer.
Here's a father from the X generation speaking on his life and how he became successful.
In my childhood in general, was basically a good one. It was very diverse. I basically lived in a house where my mother was Catholic. My stepfather was a Muslim. My father was a branch of Islam called the Five Percenters, who believed that they were the 5% of Israelites that were Muslims that stepped outside of a certain branch. So, growing up, I had to go to Catholic school. I also had to go to Baptist church because my stepfather's mom and dad were a minister and a wife. He was a Baptist preacher. And my grandmother at the time was the first lady at church. So it was kind of a conflict of interest, being as though I was going to Catholic school. And then I had to go to church every Sunday in a Baptist church, which led me to have a ton of questions about religion in general, especially when my dad was praying five times a day, me and my stepfather, because he was Muslim. And my mom sent me to a Catholic school. So,
basically, religion served as a big part of his life and opened up his mind to even more questions.
Catholicism. And then I would come home and see my dad praying on a rug in the living room because he was a Muslim. And then on the weekends, I would have to go to church with my nana and my papa because he was a Baptist preacher and they believed that I should accept Jesus Christ as my savior. And this was for the better part of my younger life all the way up until I was about 15. And I moved in with my real father. And I moved out of my mom's house and in with my dad, who was the 5%er. And that lasted for about a year. And in that year, I learned a lot. But at the end of that year, when I was leaving, he had this belief that if I didn't stay with him, I would end up dead, in his words, or in jail. And my response to him was, how could he possibly know that? And I basically told him he wasn't God and he didn't know what I was going to become or how I was going to turn out, that everything that I did was going to be up to me because I would have to make my own choices. So at that point in time, he got very upset with me because 5%ers believe that they are God. They believe that they are God, period. In fact, when my father explained to me the word Allah, he started by saying that I had to count the limbs of my body in a 360-degree motion, meaning arm, leg, leg, arm, head, which basically spelled out the word Allah, which basically, in his perspective, meant God, which, again, in his perspective, made him God. I chose not to follow this belief. But I was able to learn a lot from all of the different religions.
Now he's about to speak on how school affected him and how did he get to where he at now?
My first year of high school. Ironically enough, you want me to be honest, right before I got to my last year of elementary school in, well, we actually had to go into like middle school. So right before I got to my first year of middle school, I was going to a Catholic school and one of the priests was homosexual. I pretty much knew it. He didn't touch anybody or anything, but it was pretty clear. And I myself personally was not. And I chose not to participate in his classroom. I addressed my mom, I told my mom about it. I didn't want to, I felt uncomfortable. in the classroom, pretty much. And I got out of Catholic school, and I went to public school. And I was actually more advanced because Catholic school taught me more than public school did. So when I went to public school, I was faster than everybody in my public school, which allowed me to skate through middle school, which also allowed me to be in a position where I could do my homework without actually going into my classrooms, because the public schools at that point in time weren't teaching at the level I was learning on in Catholic school. So I got bored with that as well, and I decided to go to a trade school in Maryland, and that's where I got my high school diploma, and I also got a degree in welding. And after that, I got out of school, I got arc welding, and I got spot welding, and I came home thinking I was going to go right into work, and when I got home, they told me that I needed to go back to school to get underwater welding if I wanted to work at the shipyard here. Needless to say, being young as I was, I did not want to be a welder. I started out picking the thing that was going to pay me the most at that point in time. And when I came home, that's not what I wanted to do. Eventually, I ended up going into what I always did like to do, which was electronics and communications. So I got a job working at Fujitsu, where I basically built all of the things to make the internet work now. And 9/11 came, and I got laid off. So when I got laid off, I refused to stay home. So I got up every day and went and looked for a job every day. And so I got into Comcast. Now I worked my way up from being a cable guy to a lead cable guy to a manager. Well, a supervisor. I'm in management now. So that's school and work. I also did get a degree in telephony. When I was working for Fujitsu, they sent me to college courses for me to get a degree in that. So I ended up getting a degree in telephony as well as welding. I probably will never use my welding degree or what I got in welding, but the telephony came in handy when I came to work for Comcast, because everything that they taught me in Comcast, well, in Fujitsu, and I ended up taking over to Comcast with me. So everything, even as far as your IT, the wires that are running right into your computer right now, Wi-Fi, Category 5, 24 pair, 64 pair, I can punch down a whole building. So I learned a lot, and I'm still learning. Every day is a process. You learn more and more every day.
After all these challenges, he seemed to overcome everything and become a successful man in Generation X and a wonderful father.
I am introducing you to Jesse LaTorre. He is a Generation X person. One of the most memorable times for Jesse LaTorre was when he went to college and got to learn various of new things. And this is what he had told me about his experience.
When I was when I was a student in the university, I was in the university going into my classes. That was the best time.
So after him telling me that it was his best time, I wanted to know why.
Because I was doing things that I never thought I could do, I could ever do, and I was learning stuff. I was having fun with my friends, and on the top of that, I was really studying and getting me a career. So it was something that it was very, very interesting, because all the time I got over there, I have like in studying, I have sometimes hard time when the tests are coming, when the classes are very hard. But anyway, I succeed in everything, and it was very, very nice, very fun. I did things that I'm sure I cannot do it again out of the university. Things that I never did in the high school or the school, and things that you don't do every day.
I wondered what kind of things he did.
Join the rescue clubs, radio science clubs, chemistry clubs, and we do a lot of stuff. We did many different stuff, like things that you see on the TV that you only do in the movies and you don't do regularly in any place, like building stuff, like making stuff in chemistry school and using those stuff in the real world, like some kind of soaps or some kind of paints. And I was also in the school of the blades and the tennis, things like that that you don't do in a regular schedule in any school. So, and if you go out on the streets, you gotta pay a lot of money if you wanna do all that kind of stuff.
Now he is saying that he wouldn't change anything if he ever had the chance to do it again.
Nope, at all.
He now is explaining why he wouldn't ever regret going to college and learning everything that he had to learn.
Because it was the best time of ever, ever, ever. So you don't have to regret it for when you have something fun. Maybe the only regret, and it's not a regret, it's just a wish. I will wish then I can do it again.
In college, he had made a lot of friends, and he would talk to them, as he said in the following.
Yes, always. I keep in touch with everybody. Well, not with everybody, but most of my friends.
He kept in contact with about 50 or so friends. And he tells the story about how many students were accepted and how many flunked and how many didn't, how things changed over time.
I remember we started the school like 2,000 guys, and that at the end we graduate on 12. 12 of us get the degree, everybody else, you know, fail or stay behind, or some other quit because it was too hard for them, or because they got some other kind of problem. But we succeed. Anyway, I have still like 50 friends in my list. I keep in touch with all these people. Some people are in France, some people are in Italy, some in Spain, some in Argentina, Mexico. I got one good friend in Grenada, some people in Colombia, some people in Venezuela, some people in the Saudi Arabian countries, and I got some people in Sweden also, some others in Canada, some others in the United States, some others, who knows where.
Now, he is talking about if he ever had a chance, would he do it again? And what would he do differently, if he could?
What I will do different? I think maybe, I don't know what I would do different. Maybe I did a lot of stuff. I did a lot of things. And I don't see how can I do more. But anyway, I will try to do more. What I will do different? I don't think I will do anything different. I think I will do exactly the same thing. I don't see any other different thing maybe I will do. I do a lot of stuff. I do a lot of things. And I got a good memory of that. So why I would like to change that?
He was 50 when he was in college, and it made me think. Does he think that now it's too late to go to college again? He had said, no, it is never too late to go to college and learn, because you're basically learning your whole life, as he explains it now.
You never, never stop learning. You never, never stop living, because you are alive. So you will never, never stop breathing. And that means you will never, never stop learning if you want to learn. You will do whatever you want.
He is now going to explain who supported him, who was there the whole road to make sure that he kept on track.
Who supported me? About support, I will say myself. But who is with me in the whole journey, my whole adventure? My wife, my kids, my mom, my dad.
He is now telling us that his family, his mother, his father, his children, and his wife both supported him. Which means, why were they important to him? He explains this in very detailed way.
They are my life. They are everything. I'm here because of them. They are part of my life? No, they are my life. They are just like one of my fingers. They are just like one of my arms. They are me.
I wondered, why would he say that? Why would he explain them in that way?
Because when you get married, because there is something that you cannot put apart. You belong and you get all the support of your parents, and you live with your parents always. So your parents is you. You are them. You are just an extension of them. And did they decide to get married with a woman? It's because I love them. That was pure love. So much love that I still married with the same woman, and I don't regret that. Never, ever. And I got my kids. They don't come by mistake. They came because we want it. Because we love it. Because we decide that. That's an extension of myself too. That's an extension of us. So whatever I got, it's me. It's my mark. It's where I'm coming from. It's where I'm going to.
His college experience helped him a lot. He remembers still things that he learned, and he uses it in a daily basis depending on what is needed at the moment. He said it would be a waste of time if he had never used it again.
That would be a waste of time if you don't use it.
I had asked him in what type of ways he had used his knowledge that he got from college.
In life itself? Whatever you learn in the way of your life, if you don't use it, because you waste your time, it's kind of stupid. But if you learn it and you got it and you use it in every single step of your life, in a different, sometimes you're going to use some kind of tools. Sometimes you're going to use another kind of tool. But anyway, you got one tool A and you got one tool B. You learn how to use that. You learn how to use that tools and when to use that tools, which means you learn something, which means I'm doing it every single day of my life. I don't know if I'm using the tool A or I don't know if I'm using the tool B, but I make my mind. That's the knowledge you get in your college. That's the knowledge you get in everywhere. That's life.
He is telling us now that if you want to go back to college again, you need to do certain things, and that it'll be much easier if you want to study again because you've already been to college once.
The most important plan you want to learn, the most important plan you're going to use if you want to go back into the college or something like that, because you were over there one time, so you know how is that. So this time it's going to be somehow easier because it's not like a whole new world for you. It's a whole new world of knowledge, but it's not a whole new world because you know how is that, because you've been over there, because you know what to expect, and you know it's a challenge. And every challenge comes with a price. And of course, if you go again to the university or college, you're going to look for a master's degree or a PhD degree or something like that. You know you're going to have to do more stuff. And you know that. This is a challenge, but you are ready for that because you know what kind of world you're going to fight over there.
I wondered if he would ever recommend this to anybody else.
Gorgeous. It's gorgeous. That's the best life. And any regular student, if you want to be somebody, not like if you want to be somebody, but if you want to understand a better stuff in this world. If you want to study the world you're living in which you are living, if you want to have a better idea of what is happening, what is going around you, you need to go somehow to get some kind of experience in the college or university. The difference between going to university and getting the knowledge or the experience on the real life is very, very simple. In the real life, you can learn something in around 10 years. If you go to the college, these people that are over there, the professors, they know that things that you have to learn in 10 years in the regular life, and they're going to teach it to you in 10 months.
We are the descendants of
Generation
X.
Slowing down, I look around and I'm so amazed. I think about the little